You are listening to GLJ Shorts, a podcast by the German Law Journal. Here, our authors present their articles in a nutshell, all of which you can find at germanlawjournal.com.
In this episode, Carlotta Rigotti will talk about her article, Image-Based Sexual Abuse and EU Law, a Critical Analysis. The article was co-authored with Claire McGlynn and Franziska Benning and appeared as first view in December 2024. In a nutshell, what is your article about?
So my article, or rather our article, as you said, it reflects a great collaboration with Professor Claire McGlynn from Varen University and Franziska Benning from the German NGO HateAid, provides the first comprehensive critical analysis of the new EU directive on violence against women and domestic violence, focusing specifically on the regulation of image-based sexual abuse. And when I refer to image-based sexual abuse, I mean all forms of non-consensual creating, taking, sharing, and threatening to share intimate materials. Perhaps you are more familiar with the term revenge pornography, but this label is problematic because it blames the victim, suggesting retaliation provoked by them, while completely overlooking the underlying gendered power dynamics. Also, revenge pornography is a misleading term because it excludes many other similar behaviors, such as upskirting, sextortion, or sexually explicit deepfakes. So in our article, we start by explaining the nature, scale, and significance of image-based sexual abuse, and then examine how the directive addresses these issues, all after giving a bit of context surrounding its adoption. Overall, we welcome the directive as a milestone because it doesn't only harmonizes the criminalization of image-based sexual abuse across member states, ensuring a minimal level of protection for victims, but also takes a more holistic approach. This includes provision for victim assistance and support, prevention and early intervention measures, and fostering collaboration both across the EU and among various stakeholders. We also explore how the directive intersects with other relevant regulatory frameworks, particularly the Digital Services Act and the AI Act. In fact, these instruments contribute to the regulation of image-based sexual abuse through their focus on platform accountability and AI governance. However, as we highlight, there are significant synergies, but also inconsistencies between these frameworks that warrant closer scrutiny. Well, this brief video cannot cover all the insights from our analysis, but I invite you to read it. I can share that we identify several limitations in the directive, particularly its failure to fully reflect the diverse experiences of victims. And last but not least, we conclude that while the directive represents a promising step, it remains a partial solution.
What's at stake and why now?
What's at stake? Well, where should I begin? Before, I forgot to make it clear that image-based sexual abuse is a deeply sexualized and gendered harm that exists on a continuum of sexual violence women and girls experience through their lives. Also, the specific nature of this harm often depends on personal characteristics and intersecting axes of social oppression. So let's say that at its core, image-based sexual abuse challenges women's rights, the rights to participate fully and equally in society and cyberspace. So it means that what at stake is the right for women to use digital environments as a platform for work, play, engage, resist, all without fear of harm. And at a broader societal level, addressing image-based sexual abuse is essential to ensuring a cyberspace that is inclusive and diverse, where everyone can contribute to shaping its future safely. And you ask why now? Well, the EU Directive on Violence Against Women and Domestic Violence was adopted in May 2024. And member states now have 3 years to transpose its provision into their national framework. And since EU directive allow member states discretion in how they achieve their objectives, we felt it was critical to offer a detailed and constructive analysis of this new piece of law. And so let's say that our aim is to encourage national transposition that go beyond the minimum requirement, increasing protection and support for victims while ensuring the directive's objectives are met in a meaningful and effective way.
Where do we go from here?
So, as I've just mentioned, member states are expected to transpose the directive within the next 3 years. And this timeline presents an urgent opportunity for us to disseminate our analysis as widely as possible, ensuring that our concerns and recommendations are heard and considered in the transposition process. Beyond that, I'm also hopeful, and I think my co-authors agree, that the implementation of both the Digital Services Act and the AI Act will take on a more feminist-oriented approach, recognizing that these laws must better reflect the lived experiences of women and other historically oppressed groups. In fact, new technologies are not just products, they are societal constructs that often perpetuate gender bias and harm. And this is a key area of interest for me, for us, and I look forward to continuing my research on the intersection of law, gender, and technology.
Thank you very much, Carlotta.
This was GLJ Shorts, a podcast by the German Law Journal. My name is Nora Markart, and I'm an editor of the German Law Journal. Find us at germanlawjournal.com and tell us what you think on Twitter or on Facebook. Thank you for listening.